Coming up, the spreading popularity of meditation to schools, corporations, and even the United States Capitol. And a desert monastery in the remote mountains of Syria. Before the violence, it was a center for pilgrimage and interfaith dialogue. Plus, as the holy month of Ramadan begins, reciting the entire Quran by heart, more than 6,000 verses.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company. The estate of William J. Carter, the Jane Henson Foundation, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. Religious groups are among those expressing sorrow and outrage over the massacre at a Colorado movie theater on Friday. President Obama called for a day of prayer and reflection for the victims and their families. In other news, as the international community continued to wrestle over a response to the growing violence in Syria, religious leaders intensified their calls for more humanitarian aid and an end to the crisis. A Catholic archbishop inside Syria urged world leaders to, quote, speak with one voice in order to bring about peace. Meanwhile, the United Nations says the number of Syrian refugees has nearly tripled since April, to more than 100,000. U.S. civil rights groups this week filed a federal lawsuit challenging an unmanned drone attack that killed three American citizens in Yemen last October. Extremist cleric Anwar al-Awlaki, his son, and Samir Khan, a propagandist for al-Qaeda, were all killed in the American drone strike. The U.S. says the mission was part of the war against terror, but the civil rights groups say these were targeted assassinations of U.S. citizens and therefore a violation of the Constitution and international law. The world's more than 1.5 billion Muslims have begun observing the holy month of Ramadan, when they fast every day from dawn to sunset and offer special prayers and gifts to the poor. But what about Muslim athletes at the Olympic Games, which are set to open in London this coming week? Should they participate in the fast? If they do, will it affect their performance? Kim Lawton reports.
Muslims observing the month-long Ramadan fast are not allowed to eat or drink anything at all, even water, from sunrise to sunset. All Muslims who are able to do so are supposed to fast, but the Quran does allow for some exceptions.
There are verses in the Quran talked about people who are sick or people who are traveling. So within that period of travel or people who are sick, they're actually exempted from fasting.
Many Muslim Olympians believe they come under the traveler's exemption. Judo champion Mahir Abu Rumele is the first Palestinian to qualify for the Olympics. He says, we asked religious scholars and they said that if we're out on a mission like this, out on a national mission, there is no problem with not fasting, on the condition that when you return, you fast the days you lost, because fasting, like prayer, is obligatory. Religious scholars have said there are several ways Muslims can make up for not fasting during Ramadan.
You know, if you are able to fast in the different days, you are eligible to do that. If you are not, you can also pay kind of charity instead of fasting.
Mohammed Sabihi on the British rowing team says he's decided not to fast this year.
The decision was made very early on that I shouldn't fast. That was a personal decision I made between myself and my family. And then I informed the coaches of this.
Instead, Sabihi says he'll be making extra donations to needy families. Still, many other athletes say they will observe the Ramadan fast, and they're not concerned about how it may affect their performance. In 2008, Saudi Paralympic triple jumper Osama Masoud Al-Shankiti fasted, and he won the gold medal. He says you can play while you are fasting without any problems. And some Muslim Olympians are hopeful they may even get a special Ramadan blessing for doing so. I'm Kim Lawton reporting.
An estimated 3,000 Muslims will be competing in the Olympics, but no American Muslims this time. In other news, faith groups are raising concerns that the country's widespread drought will drive up food costs, which will especially hurt the poor. More than half the U.S. is now facing some degree of drought, the worst conditions in 25 years. Much of the country's soybean and corn crop has been affected. Several houses of worship are praying for rain. We have a story today about the spreading popularity of the many kinds of meditation, the ancient practice of sitting quietly, concentrating on the breath, and just being present. In the U.S. in recent years, mindfulness meditation has become a mainstream stress reducer, widely recommended, as Lucky Severson reports, even by a member of Congress.
You hear athletes talk a lot about being in the zone. You know, what's that mean? Does anybody know what that means?
Ohio Democrat Congressman Tim Ryan talking with kids on Capitol Hill about his favorite subject, mindfulness, what he sees as the result of meditation, not a typical Washington fixation. Ryan believes everyone would benefit from the practice, individually, in Congress, and as a country. He says it's what he needed.
The pace was getting so demanding between the fundraising and the campaigning, and it was just, I was to the point where I thought, I'm 35, if I keep on this trajectory, I'm going to be burnt out by the time I'm 40.
Congressman Ryan has written a book called A Mindful Nation, and now with the conviction of a missionary, he's peddling its message to anyone who will listen.
By being in the present moment, by taking that deep breath like you're shooting a foul shot, then you can approach your life in a way that you actually have control of what you're doing.
Ryan meditates daily before he comes to work. He says it's a matter of sitting quietly and focusing on that very moment.
I find that starting the day with a little bit of quiet time changes the whole complexion of the rest of the day. You know, it's almost like warming up before you go into an athletic event. But the key is that you can do it anywhere.
He thinks it's a practice needed now more than ever. Look around, he says, at the hectic and chaotic world we live in.
I think everyone's right there on the edge looking for something to help them deal with 24-hour news, information overload, texts, emails, always on the job. People are looking for something to help them deal with that.
Congressman Ryan says, contrary to what some believe, it's not necessary to be a Buddhist to meditate. He's a lifelong Catholic.
I think mindfulness, by grounding you in the present moment, can actually enrich whatever religion you participate in. You don't have to believe anything. You don't have to, you know, accept certain precepts or principles. You just basically need to practice being in the present moment. And then you can take that to whatever religion you practice.
There's no separation between life and the meditation practice. And when the meditation and life become the same thing, in a sense, we light up and become more alive.
Congressman Ryan says it was a retreat like this that rocked his world, those are his words, a retreat at the Omega Institute in upstate New York, where people come from all over the world to hear Jon Kabat-Zinn teach on mindfulness. Well, he's an MIT-trained molecular biologist who founded the Stress Reduction Clinic at the University of Massachusetts Medical Center 33 years ago. He says there's nothing complicated about the practice of meditation or mindfulness.
The way I define it is the awareness that arises from paying attention on purpose in the present moment, non-judgmentally. So in a sense, the cultivation of mindfulness is observing how mindless you are almost all the time. Certainly true for me. I mean, the mind goes off, and then with awareness, you bring it back.
This is Darius Douglas. He started meditating about 10 years ago when he was in the fifth grade. Now he can slide into it almost instantly, even with a camera staring at him.
It gives you a quiet place inside of yourself, where as though you don't have to feed and react off of the things that's going around in the environment the environment around you.
Exhale, full fist.
Darius learned how to meditate in a program started in some public schools in Baltimore by the Holistic Life Foundation 10 years ago. The program was created by brothers Atman and Ali Smith and Andy Gonzalez.
Darius, in the fifth grade, he's probably one of the toughest kids I've ever met in my entire life. He settled everything with his fist, and then at some point it just clicked with him where he just decided that he was going to try something else.
Ali and his brother Atman learned meditation from their parents. They thought it, along with yoga, might do some good in some of West Baltimore's toughest neighborhoods.
We were kind of skeptical ourselves when we first started. I mean, we knew how the yoga and the meditation stuff were affecting us, and we thought it might work with kids.
The levels of stress down into the, you know, elementary school are colossal. The fact that the digital age is upon us and the children that are being born now have never experienced analog life and, you know, are almost being born with these electronic devices that are very seductive, very addictive, and distracting.
It first started off fighting and, you know, doing the WrestleMania thing, rolling up the mats, beating each other with the mats instead of sitting down and practicing the yoga. And, you know, within time, the fights in the yoga room went down a lot. The amount of times that they were getting in trouble during the course of a day went down. The teachers would come and talk to us and tell us, like, man, whatever you all are doing, keep doing it.
The principal sends some of the best and some of the most troublesome students to the meditation classes. Talia and Keon, each 10 years old, seem to think that the classes at Coleman Middle School have helped them become better students.
Because I usually be yelling and stuff, but now I take the yoga class, I don't yell.
Are you doing better in school?
Yes.
How?
Paying attention, doing my work, not talking, not fussing, not fighting.
I'll pull two kids apart from fighting, and I'll tell them, put your hand on your heart. And they can feel it beating out of their chest, you know. And I say, start taking some deep breaths. You know how to do it. Sometimes it may not work immediately, you know, but they do know the cues now. And so long as we keep telling them, hey, take your breath. Don't forget, take your breath.
With Congressman Ryan's encouragement, right, some public schools in his home state of Ohio have started meditation classes.
I see these kids, my God, they have hope. They all of a sudden, boom, have hope. Because you taught them the most essential skill they need to live, and that's to be aware of their own emotional state and to begin to cultivate in some way their own ability to pay attention.
If the congressman had written a book on mindfulness, say, 10 years ago, he says there likely wouldn't have been as much interest. But these days, he says everyone is doing it.
The United States Marine Corps is doing it. Google, Procter & Gamble, General Mills, Target, Phil Jackson, the great basketball coach, used this technique with the Chicago Bulls.
One reason meditation is becoming more mainstream is because of the reliable and consistent research by people like Jon Kabat-Zinn that show that it works.
Even short periods of training in mindfulness can actually change the thickness and the size of certain aspects of the brain that are important for dealing with stress, for working memory, for keeping things in mind that you need to know in order to solve problems.
Congressman Ryan thinks mindful meditation would improve the low level of civility on Capitol Hill.
You'll be more aware of what you say and what you don't say. And that's the whole thing with the practice, is that you begin to respond to things as opposed to react to things. If we responded to problems as opposed to reacted to problems, it would shift the direction of the country.
In all Asian languages, it's said that the word for mind and the word for heart is the same word. So if you're hearing the word mindfulness and you're not in some way having a kind of simultaneous hearing of it as heartfulness, you're not actually really understanding it. So compassion and mindfulness are like two wings of the same bird.
Once you kind of like tap into that inner peace, that inner beauty inside of yourselves, be more empathetic. You will want to help everybody out. You will want to, you know, just give and not look for anything in return. Just give because you know it's the right thing to do. And, you know, that is what's missing in this world.
Congressman Ryan says he's been stunned by how many members of Congress from both sides of the aisle have told him they need some stress relief, which should come as no surprise to the millions of stressed-out Americans. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Lucky Severson in Washington.
The spiraling violence in Syria has affected all areas of life there, including religious life. The Syrian desert monastery Deir Marmoussa, north of Damascus, was once a center of pilgrimage and interfaith dialogue, but the Catholic priest who leads the monastery was expelled from Syria last month, and the future of his ministry is uncertain. Fred DeSam Lazaro visited before the violence exploded and has our report about Deir Marmoussa and the work once done there.
So this is where St. Moses the Abyssinian actually prayed?
Yes, this is his house.
About 3 decades ago, Father Paolo Dall'Olio happened upon these caves about 60 miles north of Syria's capital, Damascus. It was in these remote mountains that a group of monks from Ethiopia first made a hermitage back in the 6th century A.D.
You see, this is one of the grottos of the ancient hermits in this mountain. Now here we have transformed this place in a chapel.
Back in 1982, this Italian Jesuit, then 28, was studying Arabic in neighboring Lebanon when he hiked up to this spot for a retreat, a retreat he had to extend because of a serious fall.
There was no way out, so I stayed here 1 week with my broken leg.
He did find the stamina to explore the area and ruins of a long-forgotten monastery. It had been used for centuries before being abandoned in the late 1800s.
I have found really what I was looking for.
Dall'Olio was seeking a monastic life, and he got permission from the local church authorities to rebuild and revive this monastery. His first task was to put a roof on this church, built in the 11th century, itself on the ruins of a Roman castle.
I came in the night, and then I came inside this church. There was no roof, so there was an incredible roof of stars.
It took years and a bit more than $500,000, mostly from European church and individual donors, to restore these almost 1,000-year-old images, or those that could be restored. Worship services use a rite of the Syriac Catholic Church, one of the several Eastern Christian traditions.
Here, in the name of the Lord, asking for peace, brotherhood, understanding, consideration, respect, harmony.
Traditional as the service is, Dall'Olio is driven by what he calls a practical theology, reaching out and building bridges to the Islamic community, the vast majority of their neighbors. Judaism and Christianity predated Islam in this ancient land, but today very few Jews remain in Syria, and Christians account for just 10% of this country's population. On the eastern wall of the church, facing the Muslim holy city of Mecca, the Arabic symbol Allah. Christian monasteries were protected as holy places by the Prophet Muhammad, Dall'Olio says, and this one harkens back to a tradition he calls Abrahamic hospitality.
These people have been in the same villages, working with the same people for 14th century. We are together in front of God, and we recognize each other as believers. In the Islamic town, there is Muslim, Christians and Jewish. They worship God in a kind of choir.
Father Paolo encourages visits from and dialogue with Muslims, many of whom join Christian visitors in the climb up 347 stairs to the monastery. Some, like scholar Atas Gomul, exploring aspects of Islam's relationship with Judaism and Christianity, stay for a while to conduct research in the growing library.
I was surprised to find so many books about Islam in a Christian monastery. I think it is very good to have a dialogue between the religions, to respect each other, and to love one another. Politics always seems to take precedence over religious dialogue.
Father Paolo has big plans to continue the dialogue. He's expanding guest facilities and building a new conference center, including, he adds, an access road that will allow those unable to make the long hike to visit. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, this is Fred DeSam Lazaro at the Deir Moussa Monastery in Syria.
In exile, Father Dall'Olio has become a strong international advocate for peace in Syria. He hopes to return and resume his ministry as soon as possible. During this holy month of Ramadan, Muslims are expected not only to fast and worship and give to the poor, but also to read and listen to the entire Quran, which some can recite from memory, more than 6,000 verses. We spoke with Dr. Muhammad Farouk, the president of the Islamic Center of Northern Virginia, and Sheikh Muhammad Al-Rayi from Saudi Arabia about the spiritual blessings of reciting and hearing the Quran.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, Ar-Rahman Ar-Rahim, Maliki Yawm al-Din, Iyaka na'budu wa Iyaka nasta'in, Ihdina الصراط المستقيم, صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
When you're reciting the Quran, you feel that you are talking to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Creator, and you feel uplifted spiritually. Not only the reciter, also the people who are listening as well. For each letter, you get 10 blessings. When you listen to Quran, you're getting the same number of blessings as if you were a reciter. It is God's gift. I don't believe that I could memorize this big book just on my own. It is from God.
When you have someone who is reciting in a sweet voice, then you are listening something which will impact your heart. Because as we believe that words of Quran is from God. When he recites, I feel like that I have sometimes goosebumps, sometimes I'm overjoyed, sometimes I'm literally crying. That is so powerful.
سمع الله لمن حمده الله أكبر الله أكبر.
We recite the Quran that we can understand what we are supposed to do, what God has given us the commands, what He is saying to us, and how we have to spend our life. If we understand Quran, then the chances are that we are going to do the same thing which God is asking us. We are being judged that what we have done. If there is something against God, He can forgive us if we ask for the forgiveness. In Islam, we have the concept, if you have done something wrong against any human being, you need to go back to that human being, you have to ask the forgiveness. A just society is the biggest blessing. And Quran is saying again and again in many ways that a just society is needed.
Toward the end of Ramadan, you feel sad that the blessing you were in, you're going to be ending soon.
This is such a blessing that we are able to finish. God has given us the chance to read the whole thing, and we try to will remember the whole thing in during the next coming year.
Finally, part of the AIDS Memorial Quilt arrived at Washington's National Cathedral this week. The quilt, now 25 years old, is too large to be displayed in one place. Several panels are currently at the cathedral, including one that came from St. George's Cathedral in South Africa, where it was blessed by Archbishop Desmond Tutu. There was another special blessing for the quilt in Washington on Wednesday. That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and watch us anytime on smartphones. There's always much more on our website as well, including an audio-guided meditation by Jon Kabat-Zinn. You can comment on all our stories and share them. Audio and video podcasts are also available. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, more scenes of the AIDS Memorial Quilt at Washington's National Cathedral.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company. The estate of William J. Carter, the Jane Henson Foundation, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Be more. PBS.